From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. Last month, the state of Idaho joined 42 other states in a lawsuit against Meta, that's the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, alleging that the tech company's platforms have significantly contributed to the youth mental health crisis by making their social media platforms addictive. And outside of this lawsuit, and in light of recent youth suicides here in the Treasure Valley, what's being done locally to address this crisis and how it's impacting our children, we wanted to take a look at all of that. So joining us today to talk more in depth is Scott Curtis, CEO of the Idaho Youth Ranch, and Dr. Spencer Merrick, the psychiatrist at the Idaho Youth Ranch's Residential Center for Healing and Resilience. I want to welcome both of you to the program.
Thank you, Gemma. Good to be here.
Glad to be here, Gemma. Thank you.
So Scott, in your opinion, I'd like to know if you believe that this lawsuit against Meta is important and why?
Well, thanks, Gemma. You know, honestly, in terms of the actual details of the lawsuit and what are going to come out of that, that's not the space the Youth Ranch is really stepping into. And I don't understand enough of the legal aspects of it. But we do think it's really important to acknowledge that what has been going on in social media is damaging to our youth. So that's what we're trying to do, is really take this moment to make sure parents in particular and the community in general elevate their awareness of what social media is doing to kids.
So Dr. Merrick, as I mentioned in the introduction, you're a psychiatrist and you work with youth on a daily basis who are in mental health crisis. Do you think that these claims against Meta are accurate in the sense of it being addictive? And do you see kids who are in crisis because of social media?
Absolutely, to both questions. To the first part, whether or not social media is addictive, it is intended to be. It is coded to be addictive. That's how we see youth who are stuck on their screens for long periods mm-hmm. of time because it is a slow dopamine drip for them. And the way that even just the shape of the screen and the way that you can scroll through, every bit of that has been very finely detailed to really hit addiction centers in your brain to keep you scrolling, to keep you looking for more content. We're seeing the videos getting shorter because, again, it's just short little bursts of dopamine that are inherently addictive. And that is not an accident. Is as far as whether or not we're seeing that effect on the youth in clinics and certainly at our center, it's across the board. There's no discussion. You can't have a discussion nowadays with youth without incorporating social media into a large part of that discussion, asking what are they on? Even at younger ages, I'm asking if they have a phone and if they have accounts, and that will be a greater discussion with parents. But mm-hmm. what they're on and what that content, what they have access to and what that is doing for them in a bigger sense.
Well, and in the lawsuit, the states say that research has associated children's use of Meta's social media platforms with, and I'm going to quote something from the lawsuit, quote, depression, anxiety, insomnia, interference with education and daily life, and many more negative outcomes, unquote. So Dr. Merrick, in what you are seeing with youth in crisis, again, is that an accurate depiction of what you're seeing?
You know, some of this is a little bit hard to parse out because we're looking at correlation and not correlation is not causality. But there are mm-hmm. several studies that have tried to answer this question of how much of the increase in rates of depression, and it's a substantial increase in rates of depression and anxiety and in changes in suicide rates that are very important and concerning, how much of that might be related to social media versus other trends. And the answer that is coming through is that social media is maybe not all of, certainly not all of the explanation for this trend, but is absolutely a component of it. Even if we're looking at COVID as being one of the inflection points in some of that data, COVID definitely drove people to their phones and to social media. And so that's not something that people can, that you can really parse out separate from that, because that was what got increased the use of social media for across mm-hmm. the board for everybody, for adults and youth, mm-hmm. As a means of connection, and there are positive results because of that, because people were still able to connect, the youth were still able to connect. So it's not all bad, but we definitely have seen that needle point all the way in the other direction, where it's become isolating for a lot of youth. And that's mm-hmm. the discussion that I have frequently with youth in my office, is that they are really connected to everybody. They have so many friends on different platforms, and they'll even scroll through and show me, look at all these friends that I have, and they're lonely. They're sad and they're mm-hmm. lonely, and they are acutely aware of how difficult in-person social interactions are sometimes, and mm-hmm. and they're really struggling.
Well, and you know, Dr. Merrick, that's such a good point, because I just had a conversation with my oldest child the other day, talking just about the teenage years, right? And that it's like, I was like, it's the hardest time of your life. Like, being a teenager is difficult. It is so hard. And part of it is your frontal lobe isn't developed yet, right? So you can't look long term. And mm-hmm. and then you add in, you know, loneliness, and you don't understand that loneliness ebbs and flows, right? But mm-hmm. but Dr. Merrick, I mean, I think those are like really big concepts, even for adults to sometimes understand. So how do we have that conversation with our kids and maybe help them to understand that it's just a rough time in their lives?
Yeah. And it is, and it's such a, for me, it certainly is, with my kids, and for, I think, most parents, of the not that weren't raised in a social media generation, it's foreign to us how difficult mm-hmm. this might be for them. Because like you said, teenage years are inherently difficult, with so many things that you start to care about that maybe as an adult you get perspective and realize you shouldn't need to care about those things, and what people are thinking of you but that is amplified orders of magnitude higher when you've got when you're never off, when you don't have that time when you come home from school and you're just hanging out alone with your family, because you're never off. You're always feeling that social pressure, because it's just in your pocket. It's on the screen. And so I think the first step really is for parents to recognize and acknowledge that they don't know how hard it is, but that they're trying to understand all of the dynamics. Mm-hmm. And so that really is so important to not come at this with an iron fist of, I see that you're struggling, so I'm gonna shut everything down. That can backfire and lose some really important collaboration with your kids. I think open dialogue is so critical, just opening with having ongoing, not just in a one-time sit-down conversation, but ongoing conversations about your life like at school, and what is your life like on this other universe that is in your phone? We ask mm-hmm. that so frequently, like at the dinner table or wherever, how did school go today? It may be worth asking another question of, how is life in this other universe that you live in that I don't see, that is in your phone, and creating that open dialogue and working through what may come up with that without judgment as often as possible, so that you really create that space.
Mm-hmm. And Scott, can we talk statistics for a minute, and what the research shows around youth and social media, and really, I think it's fair to say, a crisis when it comes to youth mental health.
Absolutely, and I appreciate you referring to the statistics. And I would encourage people to go beyond just what they're seeing in the sound bites of the Meta lawsuit and really look at some of the other data. The U.S. Surgeon mm-hmm. General released a report last May. So this is pretty green information. Just in May of 2023, that is all about social media and its impacts on youth. And while it calls for a lot more research, it does compile more than 20 studies. A couple of things that it really points out is, one is how ubiquitous this is. 77% of our teens are on social media every single day. And the next stat is a little more frightening to me. Just over half spend 4 or more hours on social media daily. And the average is actually 4.8 hours. If people just put that in the context of kids' other activities, including the amount of time they're talking to human beings, including their parents, it becomes pretty startling. One of the things that I find concerning is that nearly 40% kids 8 through 12 are on social media, even though most of these platforms have a stated minimum age of 13. So it's just really important parents are aware of this, and also aware, Gemma, quite frankly, of what you said, brain development. You know, the highest period of brain development is the same period that they're being flooded with all this information. And Dr. Merrick talked about the response, the dopamine response. So kids who are naturally in the stage of their life where they don't have, but are learning impulse control and emotion regulation and how to moderate their social behavior, and quite frankly, just judgment. At the same time that they're learning those things, they're being flooded with inputs and not a lot of processing time. So the statistics are pretty scary in terms of what they're leading to. And then there's lots of information about what that kind of exposure to social media does to young people. Dr. Merrick already mentioned a few of the things in terms of depression and anxiety, but there's particular studies just on the impacts in body imaging among all youth, but particularly on our girls, and how increases in social media have a marked negative effect on people's body image and things like that. So a lot of data out there for parents to digest.
And well, Scott, I would add like those, sorry, Gemma, I would add
oh, no, go ahead.
You see those posted and stated minimum ages of 13, and every youth is different. And there are a lot of 13-year-olds that I work with that I would not be comfortable with them engaging with social media at all for several reasons, because again, with that piece about impulse control being difficult for all youth, but for some youth that's especially pronounced, and they truly need help in not having access and in not being exposed to something that they may not be actually not have the brain development to navigate in a way that is at all healthy. And parents have a lot of peer pressure from their kids saying, all of my friends have these phones and these apps. And I would say that there's often more to the story there, and that to not cave to that peer pressure and know your, because you know, as a parent, you know your child best, and you know what has been, what they can and can't really control. And they desperately need your support in this.
That's a great, that's a great point, Spencer. And Gemma, if I could illuminate that with one more piece of data. If my kids were at home and they were sitting at our table, and a flyer had been posted on our front door that was filled with hate material, I would see that. I would have a conversation with them. I assume that's the same with you and your kids, right? 64% of teenagers say they have been exposed to hate material through social media. And many of our parents don't know it because we're not monitoring it. We're not having the conversations Dr. Merrick talked about. And quite honestly, parents become uncomfortable putting in boundaries. And while you want to have this open conversation and collaboration and review it, parents do also need to recognize that their frontal lobes are formed. Their judgment centers are more formed than their kids. And sometimes we do need to have healthy boundaries. We need to communicate them, not an iron fist, but we've got to make some decisions. 4 hours of social media a day is not healthy for anyone.
Well, as my kids tell me, I talk to them way too much. I mean, not to make light of it, right? It's having those uncomfortable conversations. And even when your kids are rolling their eyes or they think, you know, I mean, I get the whole like, you know, yeah, mom, we know that. Like, that's like, you're so old, right? And I'm still, you know, I always tell them, I go, well, it's my job. Like, I'm your mom. It's my job to have these conversations with you. And
absolutely.
Talk to you about these things, right? And and that's just, and it's not fun to have those conversations. But well, I think they're critically important.
What are you saying is it's your job first to be their parent and second to be their friend. And sometimes we get those backwards as parents because it's hard, you know, it's hard work. It's hard work raising these kids. And as Spencer said, they're exposed to stuff that we weren't necessarily exposed to when we were children.
I just wanted to point out and recognize that these conversations are difficult to have for several reasons with our kids, but in in no small part because they can be intimidating, because again, this is an ever-changing technology. The lingo is ever-changing. The apps and the ways that youth are communicating are changing, and at a rate that we've never seen before historically. But that is not something that we can fall back to as parents as an excuse to delay these conversations when we're seeing the mounting crisis in front of us. Parents need to feel empowered to set those boundaries like you would with anything else. You know, there are places that you would never allow your kid to go. In the same way, I would view that with certain apps and certain sites of there are places online in that universe that you should never allow your kid to go, and you should be able to set those boundaries and be empowered to do that and not feel intimidated in doing that or not feel like you're out of touch. And some simple boundaries can be even offline, of just having a phone bedtime is so critical. An underappreciated portion of this crisis is probably the lack of sleep that mm-hmm. so many youth just have the phone with them in bed and go to bed with that bright screen, and they're scrolling and that is causing so much sleep disruption that a lot of the youth that I speak with in my office, they don't go to bed until 3 or 4 in the morning. Their parents have no idea that they're just up scrolling, and they're exhausted. And that, for obvious reasons, is detrimental, not just to performance in school and in life, but is absolutely a huge contributor to anxiety and depression. So that's a simple boundary that can be placed without even understanding a whole lot about what's going on in the phone, of it's time to turn in the phone at this time that we discussed together.
So Scott, I want to talk a little bit about what you're seeing at the Idaho Youth Ranch when it comes to our youth in crisis. Mm-hmm. And I ask that question because I think it's important for people to understand what a critical level we're at. I think many people are aware of, as I mentioned earlier in this conversation, that we have seen a rash of suicides completed by youth here in the Treasure Valley just recently. And we don't know why that happened. I don't want to speculate on that at all. What I do want to talk about, though, Scott, is that I think that in light of that, it has sparked conversations. I think it's also sparked fear in parents and caregivers. So talk to us about, you know, what you're seeing boots on the ground.
Great. Thanks, Gemma. I would say we are seeing exactly what you're saying. And let me begin by saying the most important thing, that as parents become engaged or more engaged with their youth, at any point, if they see something unusual or they feel like, I'm just not sure, that is really an appropriate time to seek professional advice. Even if the professional advice ends up being, no, this is totally normal and things are fine, parents really need to reach out and get assistance from others, because as we said before, they're facing things that in many ways are bigger than what we might have gone through as youth. But what you're saying is exactly true. We are seeing an absolute epidemic of mental health crises here. The suicide rate, Idaho's suicide rate, has always been high. We know, although they're not all reported publicly for many obvious reasons, we know the number of suicides in our school districts is shocking. People across all the districts, the emergency management teams are overwhelmed with the number of crises they're having to deal with in schools. Mm. We are seeing that at the Youth Ranch. You know that we offer both outpatient counseling and telemental health across the state, as well as our crisis shelter and our inpatient residential program that Spencer works at. In all of those, our staff are telling us that the acuity, or in other words, the seriousness of the level of mental health challenges with the youth, has gone up. Our outpatient counselors are dealing with more youth who are threatening or attempting to hurt themselves than ever before.
Mm. So Scott, where then does your organization come into play in being a space, not only for our youth, but I think for parents and caregivers, when it comes to navigating this social media space safely and wisely?
Well, in a number of ways. One is just being here for folks. So if people want to reach out either through our website, youthranch.org, or through a crisis line, we welcome that. We can set up outpatient counseling for families and youth. And then, as we've mentioned before, we also have residential care. And to your point about the crisis, we have many, many applicants, and Spencer can speak to this as well. Far more applicants than we could take applying to receive our residential services.
Mm. You know, Dr. Merrick, I think the genie is fully out of the bottle when it comes to social media use in our teens and our tweens. I mean, it's not going anywhere. With that said, what in the world can parents and caregivers do to help our children navigate this? And I'll give you an example, because in my home, you know, my oldest has always been able to self-regulate. I mean, even as a toddler, just if he was watching a show and he was done, he'd just get up and turn it off. He's always been like that. If he has homework, he comes home, he gets it done. If he needs to study for a test, he does that before he gets on to any devices. My youngest, on the other hand, it is a constant battle. It is a constant battle because the moment he's on any type of device, it is like pulling teeth to try to get him refocused. And so then you're dealing with, you know, right? You're trying to parent, you're in the same household. You've got two kids and they're completely different. And then they're looking at each other being like, why does that one get this one? And why does this one? I mean, it is infuriating. And and I don't want to put necessarily blame on parents, because I think we're also in this mode of like trying to figure out how we do this, and we do this well, and we get our kids to the other side of those teenage years.
Oh, absolutely. And it's, you bring up such a good point, Gemma, with again, just that some kids are just wired very differently from each other, and the stark contrast between yours with the ability to regulate. And that's a really important part of the discussion that has to be, there aren't really, there's not going to be any benefit to blanket rules of, okay, this is the age exactly that all youth would be safe to have a social media account. Discussions like that are silly, just because the brain development is so variable among youth. But then you do run into issues where maybe if you're trying to mention, trying to have different standards in your home, mm-hmm. for trying to address that individuality, then there's a comparison. I think the biggest approach to that is always having open dialogue. But at the end of the day, falling back to your empowering yourself as an adult to, and as the parent, to really support your youth, support your kids in navigating these things safely, and in monitoring their use, and just recognizing that some kids just really need help with that, and to not help them with that is to do them a grave disservice.
Mm. And Scott, in your opinion, how important is it that parents and caregivers really understand the broader impact of social media? And question number two, talk to us about some of the innovative approaches that the Youth Ranch is taking to really be in this space with parents and youth.
Great question. I think it's absolutely critical that parents become aware of this, and it's partially why you're doing this program with us, and we're putting resources on our website. As Dr. Merrick said earlier, just because it's a different landscape than what we know, we're kind of still in this as parents. It's still our responsibility to know it. So it's absolutely critical. And that's why I shared some of that startling data at the beginning, right? For mm-hmm. parents to realize, well, this, and even for me, but I work in this space, to see that data from the Surgeon General, I have a hard time getting my head around how the average kid has 4.8 hours a day to be on social media when they're doing school. So it's just good to see. It's good to see hard data. And in terms of innovative space, I would say that we, along with a number of other organizations, have really been upping our game in terms of trauma response, how we work with the adolescent brain and help them develop tools to overcome some of the mental health challenges they're having that are often influenced by social media. That is certainly the focus of our work at the residential center. And mm-hmm. in terms of innovative, that's probably the most innovative and leading edge thing we're doing, is having opened that 64-bed facility and really being able to keep Idaho's kids at home, where they've been mm-hmm. they've been sent out of state for many, many years to get treatment for their trauma. Am I answering your question, Gemma?
You are. And to add on to that, though, is as you mentioned earlier, Scott, we still don't have enough beds. We still don't have enough spaces for all of these kids who are in crisis.
Correct.
So with that said, we do have a new hotline that's nationwide. Can you talk to us about the critical importance of 988?
You bet. I'm gonna talk about two things that you said. First of all, 988 is a hotline. I mentioned our website on our own hotline number, but really the number everyone should remember is 988. If they have a young person, or not just a young person, any family member, anyone they care about that's having some sort of a mental health crisis, including suicide, they should call 988 and get immediate resources and immediate support. The other thing I want to say, Gemma, is not only do we have a crisis going on around this and we need more resources, we need more people that want to work with young people. So it's just a plug for folks that want to work with youth on lots of different levels. I know we at the Youth Ranch have lots of positions for mental health providers, but not just mental health providers, even frontline care workers. And that is not just us. Across all of our partner agencies and collaborators, everyone needs more folks that are wanting to work with young people.
And Dr. Merrick, I only have about 2 minutes left with you and Scott, and I would really love for you to give parents and caregivers some simple maybe advice or action items that we could all do now that will at least help us to start navigating this.
Absolutely. So one of the most important things that I'll continue to talk about always with my parents and my youth that I work with is just maintaining that open dialogue and not being afraid to approach this discussion. Like you said, Gemma, the genie's out of the bottle at this point. Social media is ubiquitous, and we've got to be curious when we're approaching these discussions with our youth and not come in with an iron fist or come across as fear-mongering. While the risks are real, however, and so we do need to hold those boundaries. And so simple things would be sitting down together and regularly just asking, how was school? What's going on online? You know, that's like a follow-up to mm-hmm. some of the normal questions that you might ask. And to another, the second one that I would bring up would be setting hard boundaries for when a youth or when your child can and cannot have their phone in hand. It is not healthy for even the most responsible youth to have access to their phone all the time. Their brains are still not fully developed and they need help with a phone bedtime and for their sleep. And also it's just for a natural break from that dopamine drip that is social media. And so finding a boundary around, there are certain discrete periods of time that you that we're going to turn it in and we're going to agree on this together. And as a parent, modeling that for your kids, that you are also going to abide by those rules. You are also going to put your phone down and put it away, tuck it away in a drawer if you need to, so you can have those conversations and model that with some clout behind it, so they don't come back at you and say, well, you're on your phone all the time as well. And then monitoring use. It is well within the purview of what parents can and should do to know what their kids are doing online. Doesn't mean you need to go through all of their conversations, but for some youth, sometimes that is the case. But it doesn't mean that we need to be so overbearing, but it is okay to know what is going on and to be empowered in doing that and to celebrate what they're doing well online and not view it as always an evil, but to look at what has been going well and what's been fun and how are you connecting well through this platform.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Did you know you are physically adapting to all your swiping, scrolling, and tapping?
We're changing our bodies and what they're able to do through our habits.
NPR's Body Electric, a special interactive series investigating how to fix the relationship between our tech and our health. Listen in the TED Radio Hour feed wherever you get your podcasts.